Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time to ride along with the All Over the Map family. The one family that decided, hey, if we're going to stay home during COVID, let's make the home all over the world. As they picked up their family and set off on an amazing journey to see the world, and maybe, just maybe, find their forever home along the way. Are you there?
We are.
Hey, hello, Paul.
Okay. Sorry, I think I cut my mic off there on you here. So Caitlin and Michael Domner, we talked the last time about what led to this adventure, how you said, hey, COVID's going to make us isolate and stay at home. Why can't our home be mobile? Why can't we move this caravan all over initially the country? And then maybe keep going. Let's see what's down there. Let's see what's over there. Today, we're going to talk about that first part of the journey. When you left sunny Southern California and you decided, you know, let's see the rest of the country. It's either now or never here. The kids are being homeschooled because they have to. They can't go to school. And you talked about the crazy motivators that made you get up on the road, one of which was, well, maybe it's not so safe to go out on the road. We'll just stay here for a while. Michael was working at I think you were managing a Verizon store, and this is safer, and I'll make a little money, until one day it wasn't, and somebody came in and put a gun to your head and robbed the place, and you said, hey, there is no place that's safe. Let's go, right?
No, definitely. And one of the things kind of with that decision to travel, it really did come down to if we're going to be schooling our kids here in Apple Valley, California, why can't we do it in Yellowstone or in Washington, D.C. or exactly. In Antigua, Guatemala, like wherever we're at.
And I think that's brilliant because, you know, we all have had to, we think of staying at home, meaning that I can't go anywhere. I'm at home.
Yeah.
The kids are at home, but the home can be anywhere. And that was the epiphany, you guys. Hey, the home could be in Yellowstone right now, because if we're doing this all remotely, if we're working remotely, if we're teaching remotely, then why do we have to stay sedentary? Why do we have to stay in the same place? Let's move around here. Any fears of COVID and all that? I guess I got to get that on the table here. You're doing this at the craziest time in the world here.
We understand that, it's a very serious thing, that there's a lot of people impacted, not just in the United States, but across the world. And we've had close family members pass away from it. So we understand that there is a real thing happening out there. But we really decided that our lives weren't going to be run by fear. You can always look at what the biggest danger is to you. And, some people decide not to drive or I'm never going to fly because it's too dangerous. You get to pick your own fear and which one is the worst that you're going to be, that's going to affect your actions the most. And, we decided that, yes, this is a real thing out there. We're going to take precautions against it. We're going to do everything that we can to not catch it. Our family actually did get it. Luckily we didn't have any complications or any additional health issues that led to complications, but it's one of those things that we just we decided
vaccinated, so right. That has actually helped us in our travels because most countries require vaccinations now in order to cross state lines. We got the vaccination not necessarily because we needed the antibodies, because our bodies had already proven they could overcome the disease, but more that we would have a little piece of paper that could slip into our passports and say, hey, we're allowed to travel.
Yeah.
So did you get
planning? Yeah, we'd been planning the trip before COVID. We had kind of already had the idea and kind of a basic outline for it. And our go date had always been July of 2021. And our even all of a sudden COVID happened in the middle of that. And it didn't change our go date. We adjusted a little bit based on who's open, who's not open. We're traveling. Whoever will let us in, that's where we're going.
Right, exactly.
Rather than losing sleep over it, we're just trying to be flexible and swing, really, just roll with the punches.
So did you get COVID? I mean, let's just talk about that for a second. Did both of you get it? Did one of you get it? And did you get it out on the road?
Yeah, no, we actually got it Christmas this last year, so 2020, just 6 or 7 months before we left. Literally, it was Christmas week. So we
didn't see any family for Christmas or New Year's. It was a very quiet stay-at-home Christmas. But yeah, we both had it. For us, it showed up as like headaches and
body
fatigue. But I would actually say it was probably less inconvenient than a normal flu would have been. The kids were with us. We quarantined with them. They didn't show any symptoms, but there was no way that they couldn't have gotten the disease. So they seem to be doing just fine. And I understand there are variants and it's going to shift, but we have no chronic diseases, no allergies. Like, we're genuinely healthy young people. So I think as you look at the data, the likelihood of us being affected by COVID is much, there are a lot more things that we should be afraid of out on the road than COVID, quite honestly.
Well, and so you've already had it. And then on top of it, you took the precaution to get vaccinated, partly to give you extra insurance and partly so you'd get a piece of paper that would physically allow you to entry into these countries who are all
scared
of us. So, all right. So we went through COVID, and in a weird way, again, the whole assumption is don't go out into the world. It's scary out there. And yet you get robbed at your place of work. You get COVID before you even get on the road. Maybe it's one more thing saying, hey, it ain't safe here either. If safety is your only motivation, if you're not going to go anywhere because it's safe here and scary out there, wake up. It's scary potentially everywhere.
Well, a very personal story for me is last spring before we left, my father had been really healthy. He had been working his job at Cubic, always took good care of himself, quarantined all of COVID, was very careful to avoid it. And then he went for a hike out in the nature and he ended up getting a heart attack and passing away.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
Very suddenly. And I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, my dad put off living, right? When I can travel when I retire, I won't bother traveling until after COVID danger has passed.
Right.
And it was just a heart condition that would have been activated by any normal exercise. Like, it wasn't anything that he really could have avoided. And that just made me realize that when death comes for us, we're never going to be prepared for it.
No
matter what precautions we take, it's an inevitability. And we get to decide. The only thing we get to decide is not when we die or how we die, but how we live.
Yes.
And that for us, it actually became more important for us to do this travel because we don't know what tomorrow holds. And the only thing that we can do is decide how we're going to live today.
Well, all of those were the motivators to get you on the road. What was it like packing the family up? Because I got some very specific questions. I mean, I just, everybody's going to wonder, did you own a home or were you renting a home at the time here in Appleville?
Yeah. So we had been in our house. We had owned and lived there for almost 12 years before we started packing up. And we realized 12 years, we were like, it's not going to be that big of a deal. But we had accumulated
a lot
so much
of stuff.
over a decade.
That lamp that somebody gave us as a wedding gift, that China stuff, that whatever, that suit that I used to wear. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was interesting to kind of, we just kind of reverse engineered it, right? So we want to leave July 1st. What do we need to do 1 week before, 2 weeks before, 2 months before, and kind of planned it out. I would say we could have done a better job, but with our limited knowledge at the time, we did what we could. And we knew we wanted to have the house worked on a little bit before we had renters move in. So
recommendation is always assume it's going to take twice as long as anything that you budget for.
There you go. Literally twice as much money as
We're going to have lots of those tips from the road here, or lots of tips they learned in hindsight here. That's one of them. It takes longer than you think.
Yeah, so we decided we were going to rent out the house because we didn't need, I know some families will sell their house and live on the proceeds, but for us, that wasn't a necessity.
Right.
So we found fantastic renters just through referrals. We said, hey, we're renting our house. because COVID hadn't allowed construction, housing was really hard to come by. So we found amazing people within the week, got a year-long lease signed, and then Michael decided we're going to renovate the entire kitchen while we're moving out.
Why not?
So the one, like, there was 2 weeks between the day we left and the day they were supposed to move in. And we're like, 2 weeks should be plenty of time to pull off.
How tough can it be? Yeah, we could do this in a day. Yeah, right. Exactly.
And yeah, so that, I think looking back, we probably should not have attempted that. There was a lot of project management that we were trying to do from the road, and vendors would cancel and we have to say, does anybody else know a guy?
Yeah.
And get them, and like, we just talk to them on the phone and Zelle them some money and hope that they show up and do the tile.
And then what would they do? Hold up a little camera and say, there's the tile. And you say, yeah, that looks pretty good, I guess. And
we had to like send family members, can you make sure there's actually someone doing something in the
exactly.
house, please?
Exactly. They're sending you phony pictures from Home Depot.
But the packing itself, I found it was more difficult emotionally. Yeah, right. But from packing perspective, we decided we were going to get a 20-foot storage container. We were going to put it on the back of the properties.
Yeah, like an internet, like an international shipping container. So 20 okay. foot by 8 foot by 10 foot, basically. Yeah.
And so got that delivered onto the property. Was it 3 weeks before we were supposed to go?
Yeah, it was like the first week of April or second week of April.
Yeah. Oh, so he gave us a couple months.
Yeah,
it was
about a month and a half. Yeah,
okay. 2 months. But the hard thing was figuring out, what do we want to keep forever that we won't need for the next 3 months, right? And that's a really hard question to answer. So obviously the books went first because we are bibliophiles and we are not parting with any of our books. So the first 10,000 pounds were just books.
maybe 20,000 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
A lot of books.
All right.
And so just looking at the empty bookshelves was the first indication, oh, this is real. Like, this is happening.
Yeah.
And then we started figuring out, well, what can we sell? So we did a couple of garage sales and tried to sell stuff on Craigslist. That we should have started much sooner.
Yeah.
So I realized it helped us. And even now we're in the process. It's an ongoing shedding. It feels like a molting process.
Yeah,
and you think, okay, we molted, like we gave away, we sold half of our possessions and the other half we put away. We're narrowing everything down into a minivan. And that was hard. So 1700 square feet into a 20-foot storage container and a minivan. But then by the time we got to Miami, we had to get rid of the minivan. And now we have to narrow it down from a minivan's worth of possessions.
So it's literally like everything that we can carry on our backs and in our suitcases.
Mm-hmm. And then we've been on the road for a couple of weeks. And now it's like, man, 2 pieces of luggage, 5 carry-ons and 5 pieces of five backpacks. This is just ridiculously heavy and cumbersome.
You need camels. You need a whole crew, back in the, it was a safari in the 1800s. You need a whole group of bears or something.
Oh, carrying this. We need a mule train or a camel.
You know, we laugh about it, but yes, when we showed up in Belize, we had to get 2 golf carts and we had 3 guys helping us load our luggage onto the golf carts so we could do them through the town. And I was like, wow, this is kind of white privilege at its finest. Yeah.
I didn't want to go there, but that's kind of what it sounds like. Yes, the white tourists on safari who have to bring their china with them and their
right? And I always want to like tell people, guys, it's for 2 years. Like, please give us some grace. Like, it's not just we're here for 2 weeks. But honestly, I feel like whatever you end up packing for like a 2 week vacation is probably enough for a 2 year vacation. Like, you can buy most of the stuff that you need on the road. It has been hard getting rid of Amazon Prime because as we were preparing and deciding we were going to pack, we were doing research. We were studying other people's travel blogs. Sure. We're saying, well, what do we need? And doing our best guess. And at that point, we could have it shipped. Anything from anywhere within 2 days would arrive at our door. And so we were able to buy things like hiking sandals. We only got hiking sandals for me and Jackson. We definitely should have gotten hiking sandals for the entire crew. That was an essential that we underestimated. Mm-hmm. But then there was stuff that we thought we were going to need that we decided we weren't. So somebody was like, bring a big inflatable pillow so the kids can sleep while they're flying. And so I lugged this like 10-pound inflatable pillow. It could basically turn into an air mattress. Yeah,
it was probably like a pound and a half.
It was ridiculous.
It was huge.
And so Michael, finally, we were like 90 days into the trip when Michael was like, Caitlin, we have never used this thing. We've got to let it go. So there are things where you don't really know what you need and what you don't need until you're on the road. So you kind of overpack. At least we did at the beginning. Michael's got the Boy Scout, everybody. Always be prepared mentality. So we've got lighters and paracord and life straws, and we have jackets and we have swimsuits and one whole, like, so on our luggage container, we have a half of our luggage that's just nutritional supplements.
Half of one bag. Not half,
half of one bag.
half of the mule train is filled with
is multivitamins. Yeah. And then the other half is scuba gear, or like snorkel gear. Yeah. Because we got this really fancy full face mask so the kids would be comfortable snorkeling. And now we've been snorkeling enough that the kids are like, we don't like snorkels. We don't want to bother with fins. We don't need a face mask. Just give us goggles and we're fine. And I'm like, all right, so we don't need an entire luggage filled with snorkel gear.
So let me stop you there for 1 second. All right, so you take along this mule train out into the out on safari, and then you start shedding it. How do you shed it along the way? Do you just leave it in the hotel? Do you give it to anybody that walks up the at the beach here? You want a snorkel? Have a snorkel. You can't sell it on Craigslist because you can't sit there long enough and wait for somebody to come over to your hotel. And would they buy it at your hotel? Somebody shows up at your hotel and says, you're selling snorkel gear? Would you steal this? No, we just don't need it anymore. And we're at this hotel right now here.
Yeah. So a lot of it we've kind of found, some of it we've left at Airbnbs, like donate it to whoever stays there next. Can you read that book or go do these things? And but the next big shedding is we're going to help build a building for a school in a small village here in Guatemala, Chichicastenango. And so we're planning on leaving a whole bunch of stuff there.
Snorkel gear for the kids in Guatemala. Yeah, right.
In the mountains of Guatemala. No snorkel gear there.
So I mean, finding people who could put it to good use and donating it to them. So yeah, it's been a multiple ways of getting shedding.
And actually, at one point, we had a lot of hair products, because I don't know if you've seen any of our pictures, but we are a very hairy family. Everybody has long hair. And they don't sell conditioner a lot of places. So I had like 5 bottles of conditioner, several bottles of hair gel. And I was like, okay, this is just crazy. So I took some of my nice products and I put them in a little gift bag and I gave it to one of our Airbnb hostesses. And I felt a little bad because she burst into tears. I was like, she was like, nobody has ever given me a gift. And I'm sitting like, I didn't buy it.
I didn't buy it for a gift. Sorry, lady. I just can't use it anymore. And you get it.
We're just trying to get rid of weight, but it was like a moving experience for her. It was great.
So it made me realize, like, oh man, I would love to actually be intentional about giving away hostess gifts and things like that. And realizing, yeah, there's no way she would get this quality of products down here. I think we were in Mexico when that happened. So it's just trying to, be intentional about what we keep and what we give away and how we give it away. And it changes every time.
I you make me think of something. I've only been out of the country a couple of times, and one of them was to Belize. That was my grand adventure when I was younger here, and went up in the jungle and did all that kind of stuff that you've done here. And when I went up there, I found that there was an impulse, particularly if you like the guy, the place where you stayed, or the guide that helped you, or the person in the canoe that helped you go down the river, whatever. There was an impulse to give them something, and they often gave you something too. Quite often without any, just here, remember me, here's my bandana, here's my something. And I found us exchanging small items along the way here. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't planned for that. I didn't have enough small items to give away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something I think, and I don't know that there was a good answer of like, here, this is the perfect small item to take 10 of. But I do think if I had been thinking ahead, something from the U.S., that could be given as a token of appreciation.
Something they can't get easily. Like, for example, I had a colorful bandana. They sell them by the dozens down at Target here. but I had wrapped it up and put it, and everywhere I went, everybody wanted me to get them. Like, that's the only one I got. I should have had 10 of those in my bag and then sit here, because it was something that they couldn't get in the jungle and that they could use, as opposed to, I don't know, snorkel gear in the jungle. Here, have a snorkel gear. Wow, what am I going to do with this?
That's a good point. Michael has 4 schmogs. We could start giving away schmogs to people, like the kind of turban thing,
or caps or t-shirts or things like that. Yeah. That people just immediately, it was an easy exchange of things. They'd give me something. I forgot what somebody gave me, but they gave me a couple things like that along the way. And I was kind of like, I'm not even sure what I'm going to do with this, but I appreciate this means a lot to you, and I appreciate the gesture. What have I got here? Take my cap. Take something here.
Right. Yeah. Gift giving is a much bigger thing in other cultures, I'm realizing, than the United States is.
When I travel around the United States, I never felt like when I'm staying at the Hyatt or the Hilton or the or the Motel 6, I don't go out and say, here, take my cap. Thank you. This is a wonderful trip here or something. Or,
yes.
They'd probably give you an awful, weird, awful, odd look if you did.
Right. And none of them ever offered me anything in exchange other than, here, sign here, and thanks for coming. Right. All right. So you're off on the road now here. You've got way too much stuff. You're starting to shed it along the way here as you're getting better. The question I have, maybe this is a silly one, or maybe this is a question others listening will have, is, I get what we all need to take, but what does a 7-year-old need to take? Nothing, because they're 7? Or do they have to take that teddy bear or that Barbie doll or that something, that thing that they can't leave, that dinosaur that they've got to carry with them everywhere? I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah, that has been an ongoing question. So we have the 2 boys who are 5 and 7. And honestly, they don't have a lot of clothes. So of the carry-ons,
clothes they don't care about. They can wear the same t-shirt every day for a year.
A carry-on's worth of clothes. That's it. I did make sure that they each had 2 pairs of shoes, so a sneakers and a water sandal, so that they can kind of trade off between the two. We've thought long and hard about it. So each of them gets their own backpack. So inside of the backpack, I do have some paper goods. So we have like penmanship worksheets.
There you go.
I actually brought this big fat teach your child to read in 100 easy lessons. I'm staring at it right now because that was going to be Bradley's curriculum, basically. Right. And it's heavy as heck. So I'm really excited for him to finish reading. So we can
shed that.
But we decided Legos were really critical because there's a million permutations for Legos, right? So Cora is an arts and crafts person, and she decided to bring all of her like little crafty things. But after she finishes one, like she just did one, it was like sand art, and you peel a sticker and you pour sand on it, and it's disaster in terms of mess. And then once she's made it, what are we going to do with it? We have to give it to somebody because we can't take it on the road. So
you can't put it on the refrigerator like you usually do at home and say, there's
So for her, like that was probably less of a good decision than Legos, because Legos, we can keep them. If we lose a couple, it's not the end of the world. We didn't destroy whatever it is that we're designing.
And I think an even more important aspect of this is we told the kids is essentially like, these are a couple things that have to go in your backpack, but what else do you want to take, right? And I feel like it gave them a sense of ownership, like, oh, I get to pick, whatever I can fit in this backpack. So it started off, I think each of them brought a few stuffed animals, some pens, pencils, crayons, that kind of thing, a couple of their favorite books. Each one of their backpacks looks a little bit different based on what their interests are. Bradley's was mostly Legos because he loves Legos. He's 5. And but I think just giving him that sense of like they helped make the decision of this is what I want to take. This is what I'm going to be spending time doing. And it showed kind of what was important to them. Cora brought, I think, 37 stuffed animals. We joke that we have to get Cora a queen size bed so that all of her stuffed animals can sleep comfortably in it. But the boys, just giving them each of those, each their own sense of ownership of what they brought, I think was important.
So let me give you an example, and maybe you've experienced this or maybe you will experience this, but with little kids, there's always something they have to have. Many kids, the doll, the toy, the thing, the stuffed animal, the cap, something that's theirs, and they maybe it's almost like a security blanket. They hold on to it and take it with them. So I have a grandson who's 7 now, but when he was 5, we took him, all of us, my daughter and son-in-law and this little boy, went on a trip back to the Midwest to meet some relatives and introduce him to the family he's rarely going to see back there. So we go back for this event, and he has, I forgot what it was now, I think it was a dinosaur, and he had to carry this thing with him everywhere. Well, of course, he left it behind somewhere. Go back. And it was a disaster for a day. That dinosaur, which cost, you know, $1.95 at Target or something here, we had to go back and look for it, and we couldn't find it. And then, you know, he was all upset, and that's my dinosaur. Yeah. And he'd carried it all the way across to the middle of the country and left it, I don't know, at a restaurant or something here. I wonder if there's that possessiveness. There is something that they've got to hold on to, and it's a disaster if you lose it.
That's funny. We had that exact experience with Cora, who's now 9. She was probably 5 when it happened. And we were on a road trip. I think it was to Kansas to visit family. Same thing, going from the West Coast to the Midwest. And she had this little horsey there was a stuffed horsey, and she just loved this thing. And I don't remember where it was that we left it, but somewhere we left it at a motel on the side of the road or something, one of our overnight stops. And we didn't realize it until like the next, you know, 12 hours later, once we had driven probably 800 miles or something like that. We're like, well, we're not going back for it. Sorry. And it was a complete and utter meltdown. Caitlin ended up like painting a beautiful picture of it for Cora to commemorate it. But I think it was an important lesson too, though, for Cora, just kind of that sense of like getting through, like a sense of loss, right? And at that young of an age, like that's an impactful experience. But I think it ended up being a good thing.
And I think I'll interrupt for 1 second because we're wrapping up here pretty quickly. But I think that's one of the things your kids are going to get out of this. They're either going to be really possessive because I've only got 1 or 2 things and I got to hold on to these really tightly, or they're going to let go of the normal consumer American kids where they've got a million toys and they mean nothing to them.
That's what we're hoping.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of, as we are wrapping up, right, the theme for packing and preparation and shedding is that this is an emotional process.
Yes.
Right. Jesus said, where your treasures are, that's where your heart is. And I don't think he meant it like prescriptively, like put your money in places. It's just, hey, our possessions mean something to us. They are reflections of comfort, of security, of, they all mean something. Money means something. Our luggage means something.
That dinosaur meant something to that little boy.
That dinosaur meant something, right? And so what this, it's sort of forcing that subconscious emotional context to really come to the surface. And the hope, right, for ourselves and for our kids is to be conscious of what's going on under the surface and guide them through that. And give them the tools so they can manage loss, because loss is something, whether it's your toy dinosaur or your father, right? This is just a part of life.
Right.
And we recognize that we need to have healthy, proactive tools that allow us to love dearly. So the Mayan word for grieving is actually rejoicing. Like it's a very similar word that they use, because what you're doing is you're really celebrating your love of the thing that you're letting go of. And so when a pet dies or a toy gets lost or a parent passes away, right? You have to just understand that we wouldn't feel sad if we hadn't loved that thing so dearly. And so it's, how do we figure out how to love dearly transitory items, recognizing that everything in our life is transitory, right? Whether you're on the road or you stay in the same place your whole life, there's only this illusion of permanence. And so all we're doing is stripping away the illusion of permanence and getting to, how do we address these things in real time and love with an open heart, recognizing that nothing is forever.
And I think, I think that comes back to the big question of we're looking for our forever home, right? I mean, leaving everything that the kids had known up to that point in their life and going on this grand adventure and being able to learn from that experience and understanding that we're taking air quotes home with us because we're all here and the things that we love and are most dear to us are with us in ourselves and in our persons.
Ultimately, the only forever home is the human beings in this room, right? Because our souls are the only things that are eternal.
That's what I used to say to my parents. We moved every couple of years, as I said, shared on the first show here. That was my dad's job. We went from town to town. He was a regional manager and they'd give him a new region. And every couple of years I'd say, where are we going? And he'd say, we're not going anywhere. And sure enough, there we go. And we'd strip everything and I'd have to give up because we couldn't take everything with us each time. And it made you, it forced you to shed every couple of years because you had to move. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, I remember saying to my dad once, you know, I'm sorry that I made you live in so many homes. I said, home wasn't the house. Home's where you, wherever you are.
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
Well, we're going to follow you as you go from home to home, as the family moves around the world. Join us each and every week as we follow the All Over the Map family as they go all over the map and all over the emotions and all over the themselves as they try and figure out how do you move around the world and how do you find where to stop. That's the show, folks. Come back and join us for the insights, the inspirations, and the stories, the laughs along the way. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.